It's 7:44 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The measles outbreak in 10 states has led some officials to look to an unlikely part of the country for policy advice, Appalachia.
Every state except for West Virginia, Mississippi, and more recently California allows for a religious exemption for school children. Those three states have eliminated that religious exemption.
A discussion on laws that govern vaccination requirements coming up on West Virginia Morning. First, the news. An almost decade-long effort to build a major underground natural gas liquid storage facility in the Ohio Valley saw movement this week as state and federal politicians announced initiatives to move it forward. But as Brittany Patterson reports, not everyone is on board.
People over petro, people over plastics, people over profit.
About 40 protesters gathered Tuesday outside a natural gas and manufacturing conference in Morgantown. Inside the conference, officials and business representatives from across the Ohio Valley discussed their vision for the region to make it the nation's next center for plastics manufacturing. But outside, holding colorful signs, some with plastic grocery bags attached that whipped in the wind, environmental activists rejected that vision. Bev Reed lives in Belmont County, Ohio.
Petrochemicals are not energy. It's plastic. It's a dead product that doesn't go anywhere except to poison people.
Officials from West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania support efforts to bring cracker plants and other plastics manufacturing infrastructure to the region. The Ohio Valley sits on one of the nation's most productive natural gas and natural gas liquids repositories. Lawmakers in favor of the proposed petrochemical expansion cite an American Chemistry Council study that projects the industry would bring 100,000 jobs to the region. But that same study estimates 60% of plastic production would be for food products, an investment potentially at odds with the times as cities and companies around the globe pledge to discontinue use of single-use plastics. Protester BJ McManima with the Indigenous Environmental Network pushed back on the argument that a petrochemical future is the only one that can bring new jobs to the area.
They shout jobs, 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 making our concerns sound like we don't want jobs. We want handouts. We don't want you guys to have jobs. No, that's not right. No, we want clean, safe, sustainable jobs that create resilient, happy, and peaceful communities.
Those opposed to the petrochemical build-out say they've struggled to be heard by elected officials. Lawmakers remain steadfast. To woo plastics manufacturers to the region, natural gas liquid storage must be built. The Appalachian Storage and Trading Hub has been in the works for almost a decade. Developers are seeking billions in loan guarantees from the federal government. Here's West Virginia Governor Jim Justice speaking at another natural gas conference earlier this year.
The number one economic focus of my office today is the natural gas hub.
This week, Justice met with officials from the U.S. Department of Energy to discuss the hub and developing the petrochemical industry in West Virginia. In a press release, the governor said he would appoint a liaison to work with the Energy Department on these issues. West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin also introduced a bill this week to help make a different case for the hub. The legislation would task the Energy Department with studying its national security benefits. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
Beverage companies around the state are brewing beer, distilling spirits and syrups, and pressing cider. Meanwhile, farmers are producing fruits and grains. But for the most part, the two groups are disconnected. A conference in South Charleston aimed to address that gap, bringing the two groups together and helping each understand the other's needs. Eric Douglas has the story.
Bill Woodrum, the director of entrepreneurship for the Robert C. Byrd Institute in Huntington that organized the conference, said changes to state laws in recent years have made it easier for bottlers and manufacturers to open new businesses.
The kind of next step we see for that is helping those local bottlers, whether it's anything from kombucha to soft drinks to beer, wine, spirits, to be able to identify local sources for their product.
The conference brought together farmers and bottlers to talk about their needs.
It was nice to see a bunch of the bridge that gap of the farmers and the brewers. The conversation that was going on in that conference room was mostly breweries saying, hey, we want it. Let's start talking about what you can give us. And then now we're actually in an environment where conversations are being had.
That's Alex Duran, Assistant Operations Manager for Greenbrier Valley Brewing Company.
For us, it's very important that we use West Virginia first, not to outcast anybody from the other states, but just from our perspective. This way, it highlights some of the smaller communities in our area.
Sam Fonda, the head brewer and co-owner of Weather Ground Brewery in Coolridge, West Virginia, says he wants to connect with local farmers too.
It's one thing to say you're going to go out and look for farmers, but like just go and knock on somebody's door is kind of tough sometimes. So it's like having these meetings, meet and greets, is a great way to make connections, start utilizing each other. Possibilities are endless if we can just keep doing this kind of stuff.
Both groups are small. They face unique economic restrictions and challenges. They need to simultaneously grow product demand and increase production, which is a little bit like riding a unicycle on a ball. It's tricky and takes specific skill sets and coordination. You can't just show up with a ton of strawberries, for example. Brewers need to know weeks in advance when the fruit will be ready so they can plan their production schedule. Charles Bachway, a reporter who covers the West Virginia beverage industry, says the economic landscape is shifting and becoming more hospitable to small manufacturers and local farmers.
Brewing, distilling, wineries in West Virginia are small. A lot of the agricultural structures don't really think about them as a buyer for agricultural products, but they are, and they're becoming a more important one.
Everyone at the conference looked to keynote speaker Todd Boera for guidance and advice. He's from Fontaflora Brewery in the small town of Morganton, North Carolina. His brewery has more than doubled in size in the last 6 years, and he obtains 97% of his supplies from the Appalachian region. He says it takes a clear, value-driven mission and a lot of heart to follow through.
It's the hard road, but every time that we do something that we just put a whole lot of work into, whether it's, you know, even sourcing the ingredient to begin with, or then processing that, or maybe it's some fermentation or brewing technique, whenever we taste the final product, it's 100% worth it, because it's truly, like, that's why I always say, like, this isn't a gimmick. It is truly, it creates a better product, and it just also happens to tell a really cool story at the same time.
Staff from the Robert C. Byrd Institute didn't know how many people would come to the meeting, but 100 showed up. That far exceeded their expectations and encouraged them to move forward with the effort. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas.
Cases of measles have spiked in the first quarter of 2019 with outbreaks in 10 states. Many epidemiologists believe it's because some parents don't immunize their children. The option to forgo vaccinations varies from state to state. Some states allow vaccination exemptions based on a person's religious or philosophical beliefs. But the recent uptick of measles cases has lawmakers rethinking vaccination policies, and they're looking to an unlikely part of the country as a model, Appalachia. Trey Kay, host of WVPB's Us and Them podcast, learned about this from an op-ed published by 100 Days in Appalachia. In a recent Us and Them episode, he speaks with the author, Jamie Lynn Crofts. She's a Charleston-based constitutional and civil rights attorney, fascinated by laws that govern vaccination requirements.
So how did you get interested in the state laws that cover vaccinations?
Well, there are a few different ways. This has always been kind of a pet issue of mine. And I also have a cousin who has two young children who lives in Seattle. She happens to be a doctor, and she's always very concerned about the fact that her children could get sick. But as a civil rights lawyer, it's these state laws that really interest me and are really right up my alley.
Not that long ago, contagious diseases were a public health threat. How successful have vaccines been at containing or eliminating them?
Incredibly successful. Smallpox, for example, has been completely eradicated worldwide. Until recently, measles was considered eradicated from both North and South America.
Well, You mentioned the measles. As a kid, I remember a time before there was an available measles vaccine. In fact, before the vaccine became available in the 1960s, the CDC said that all kids under 15 got the measles. So there was a lot of concern about that disease back then. But when my son was growing up, and he's 21 now, but when he was growing up, I don't remember hearing about many of his peers having the measles.
For the last two decades, measles has been basically eradicated from the United States because of the efficacy of the vaccine. The measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, I know you mentioned rubella at the top of the show,
right.
That's part of the measles vaccine that our school children receive. It's 97% effective when it's administered correctly. And the efficacy of that vaccine can be seen in the fact that until very recently, with the rise of the anti-vaccination movement, we haven't had measles in the United States.
Well, okay, but we're like in the first quarter of 2019, and I already see stories of measles outbreaks in other states. Well, what can you tell me about that?
Already in 2019, we have outbreaks going in six different states. The latest numbers from the CDC say that there have been 159 measles cases this year. And if that continues, we could see some really drastic numbers in the U.S. as far as measles this year.
Why are these numbers cropping up?
A big reason is that a lot of parents are concerned about vaccines and not vaccinating their children.
Where is this happening?
The biggest outbreak that we've seen so far is in Washington State, in the corner right near Portland, Oregon. There's also been another outbreak in Oregon this year. And we've also seen an outbreak in Illinois and two in New York.
I'm here with Jamie Lynn Crofts. She's my guest on this Us and Them conversation. She's an attorney specializing in constitutional and civil rights, and she practices here in Charleston, West Virginia. She's researched state laws that require childhood vaccinations and how they're different across the country. Now, Jamie, you mentioned vaccination laws playing a current role in the outbreak of measles in Washington State. What other reasons do parents give for not wanting to vaccinate their children?
It varies, but the main reason a lot of parents cite is that they believe vaccines can cause autism. Sometimes their reasons are based on religion, and sometimes they're just based on a belief or a dislike of vaccines. An Arizona legislator just recently said that they believed vaccines were communist.
Really?
Yes, a lawmaker in the state of Arizona. So it can really vary pretty widely. Vaccination laws vary by state, and there are a couple of different ways that they can vary. Every state except for West Virginia, Mississippi, and more recently California allows for a religious exemption for school children.
Okay.
So that means that, for example, Christian Scientists who don't believe in medical intervention can get an exemption and still send their kids to public school. Those three states have eliminated that religious exemption. There are also another 17 states that, in addition to their religious exemption, allow for what's called a personal belief exemption. And so that would cover things like a parent believing that vaccines cause autism.
I might be, you know, well, I'm not a medical person. I'm not a doctor, and you're not either. But just as you're kind of explaining it to me, how is it that vaccinations work to protect the public?
So the first way that vaccinations work is the obvious way. When you are vaccinated for something, you're likely inoculated.
You're
from
inoculated
the disease.
From, right. Okay.
The other way that vaccines work is through something that's called herd immunity. And there are always going to be people in every society who can't receive vaccinations for one reason or another. Infants who are too young, people who have compromised immune systems, either because of autoimmune disease or chemotherapy.
Okay.
And if a high enough percentage of the population is inoculated, it will protect those more vulnerable people from contracting the diseases.
What goes into creating the state laws, and who's involved?
The state laws are, you know, generally created by the state legislators. And again, that process varies a little based on the state. But generally, a new law would have to go through both houses of the legislature and then be signed by the governor of a state. And you're going to have a lot of special interest groups that are involved when it comes to an issue like vaccines, whether it's parents who are concerned about vaccines or doctors who are promoting them.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the Us and Them episode called States Look to Appalachia for Vaccination Laws. To hear how West Virginia is the state leading the nation in effective vaccination policy and laws, download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.